So I'll begin by reading to you from the introduction to the latest catechism, that long, large document that was worked over for years, which is not intended to be the final word in inspiration or in doctrine, of course, but aims to pick up from the 2,000 years of our history some of the beauty and the central way of looking at life that belongs to our tradition, and I think it does it very well. And the final paragraph in the prologue, the introductory section, reads like this and sets the pattern for the whole book. By the way, in saying that, I'm not actually recommending you to get the book, only for this reason, that it's largely unreadable. And I only mean by that it's like a technical book on how to drive a car, you know? It's easier to get someone beside you to kind of hold the wheel, I find, or a cookbook, which I can never read. I just get my mother to show me what to do, but the books get too much for me. And likewise, a catechism is meant to be a basic reference book that you can go back to and checkpoints, or the teachers can look at, and a very important document, but not an everyday read. But at any rate, the introductory paragraph says, "The whole concern of doctrine and its teaching must be directed to the love that never ends. Whether something is proposed for belief, for hope, or for action, the love of our Lord must always be made accessible so that anyone can see that all the works of perfect Christian virtue spring from love and have no other objective than to arrive at love." It's beautiful, isn't it? And it's saying that if there's any moral teaching in the church, any dogma that you feel obliged to believe, and there are many such, if you can't see the connection with love, wait. It doesn't mean the dogma's wrong. It doesn't mean the moral teaching is wrong. But it means you haven't seen the connection yet. I think we should wait to see the connection before we act, because otherwise we'll miss it. Now, that may be overstating it. It probably is a bit. But we have to believe our hearts. We have to believe that we're made for love. And if the teaching can be presented accurately and properly, we will see the connection. I think people of goodwill will see it. And when you see the connection with love, obedience, however hard, becomes possible, doesn't it? And belief, however difficult, becomes real. When the connection is not made with love, according to this catechism here, by the way, it was the same statement made in the prologue to the Catechism of the Council of Trent in 1550. So we're dealing with a long tradition here about love, and for obvious reasons. So let's move into the very central meditation on the most stunning thing we can say. And I must say, the older I get, and I think I'm allowed to start saying that now, I'm nearly 58. I don't know when you're allowed to start saying the older I get, but seems to me that's a reasonable time to start. The more stunned I am by this incredible thing that we believe. Like we're saying something stunning, that God, and then think of all the things you think of when you think God. All the images, all the desires, but also the fears, and all the bigness of it all. God, I mean, creator of heaven and earth. I mean, we're into such enormous. Now, to say in one three-word sentence, what is God, you know? And you've got a million answers to that through the world. And the one, the beloved disciple who knew Jesus, said, God is love. Now, we actually all know what love is. We get it wrong, we get confused, but there's no one here who doesn't know what it is, because you miss it like mad when you haven't got it, and you experience incredible joy when it's there. So love is, that's what God is. And I find it just more unbelievable, but I believe it, if you know what I mean. More stunning to say. And then you look at the world and it doesn't look like that. And then you realize, hello, when I'm looking at the world and it doesn't look like love, I'm not looking at God. I'm looking at what happens when people don't believe that God is love. Do you see? If we actually believe that God is love, that would affect our lives enormously. And the things that look awful in the world would not be happening. There'd still be earthquakes and there'd still be violent eruptions of the earth. But if you're killed in an instant by an earthquake, or even in a few hours by an earthquake, and you're immediately in the embrace for all eternity of love, am I silly to say an earthquake isn't quite the tragedy it seems? If we're made for love and we're made for eternity, there are times in my life when I wouldn't mind being hit by an earthquake. It would make things a lot easier and quicker. But love is what God is. Now, that's our meditation this morning. I've placed before you, because it's the only one I've made, and if you've been here before, you've probably seen it, but I like it, and I guess you like it. It's the best I can do on an overhead, on a photocopier, an icon of Jesus. And that's the place we're going to look. I've given you these references to the New Testament on that piece of paper, so you can ignore them or listen, read them if you want to, but I'm just going to meditate through them with you. Because the only way I can believe that God is love, truly, is by looking at Jesus. And that's what we're meant to do. God is the one who loved Jesus. And Jesus is the one who knew that God is love. That's why John knew. That's why we believe it. The images of God in the Old Testament vary enormously, and don't you know it? Read through the Old Testament and you get the most beautiful passages, like a mother holding a child to the breast is one image. Another one is someone dashing babies against a rock. I mean, don't let me frighten you, but just go through those images in the Old Testament. There, God becomes the superlative extreme of every human passion that men and women experience, because the Old Testament is a response to God made by inspired and beautiful people. But the one thing all of those people have in common is that they never saw Jesus. And when they saw him, it made all the difference. If you were Mary of Magdala and you were a good Jew, weren't you glad that Jesus came along? If you were Peter, go through them all, leper. So Jesus does something to Judaism and to any human beautiful response to God that just blows it right out of where it's been and focuses it sharply and like a fire on what we're talking about today. So Jesus experienced God as love. And he experienced God as love when he was talking to mum and dad as a kid, and when he was being dragged up a hill to be crucified. He still didn't shift from the fact that God is love. And we know that because from the cross, the only words he spoke were words of love. It's unbelievable. It's fact, but it's stunning. And wouldn't it be good to get somewhere near there where you and I could always respond lovingly because we had a faith conviction, not based on how we felt, but a conviction right in our heart that God is love, and never let that go. Well, let me read you now, and just looking at Jesus if you wish, just listen to some of the things that he said and that God said to him. And I want you, of course, I want myself and you to think, What God said to Jesus is what God wants to say to you. That's the whole point of it. That's the whole point of all Paul's theology, all our Christian thing. All baptism is incorporating us into Christ. So anything God said to Jesus, he longs to say to you, or rather he does say to you. Jesus heard it and tried to convince people of it. That's his whole mission, was simply telling people what he'd experienced and begging them to believe it against the evidence, as it were. And those who did believe it became saints. The baptism of Jesus, we could start anywhere, but I'll start there. And you know the scene so well, and it's a scene of the Trinity. A beautiful portrait, I wish I could put it up for you, but you know it, you can imagine it. You've got the Son, Jesus. You've got the Spirit, which is the Spirit of love, the breath of God, communicating between God and Jesus, and it's an icon in the gospel. And you've got the Father, the lover, God, saying, "You are my son." If Jesus had been a girl, he would have said daughter. That's what he says to you, or son or daughter. "You are my son. I love you. I delight in you." In a sense, that wasn't news to Jesus. He picked it up from his mother and Joseph, and he must have had many, many childish and boyish and young manish experiences of God's love. Of course you can. Of course he would have. But whatever happened at that day of the baptism, it was very different. And it changed Jesus' life. The facts are there. Before that, he's no doubt a beautiful young man about whom we know really nothing. After it, he's a lover and a preacher and a healer and what we know him to be in the gospel. What made the difference? This baptism experience. That he'd matured enough, his heart had grown enough, his life had hurt enough, I don't know what words to use, for this day to, as man, and of course that's what we can only speak about, his heart was open enough, broken enough, to receive in this message of love in a way that drove him. They're the words used, the Spirit that said, "I love you," drove him into a desert to think, "God, this is, what do I do with this? What does this mean?" And what it meant was mission. It meant he had to go to Galilee and face the Pharisees and go to Jerusalem and couldn't stop going to people and reaching out to sinners and eating with us, because he realized that what he'd experienced, we need to experience. And that if we really believed it, the awful, awful, awful sins and hurts and stupidities of this world would stop. And that's what he longed for, peace that only God can give. And don't we long for that? So, "You are my son, I love you, I delight in you." Jesus held that moment and never let it go. And when you were baptized, and when I was baptized, God said to you and to me, "You're my daughter, you're my son. I love you, I delight in you." And he never has and never will take back that word. The rest is from John's gospel, because he's the gospel of love. Jesus says to his disciples, "The Father loves me." It's just a simple little thing to say, "The Father loves me." What a lovely thing. I don't know if I've ever said it to you before, it just jumped back into my mind. But I was in, I'll tell you, it won't hurt. I was in Italy, and I just, Rome, doing some study, and I spent a whole year listening to lectures in Italian without having studied Italian, which is rather silly, but I do silly things. But I knew French, so I could guess, and Latin, so I could guess my way through most of it. But at the end of the year, I thought, this is rather silly, because I'm focusing so much concentration, and at the end of 5 minutes the person has just said there's nothing really to do, so you can go home. And I've kind of, you know, given it all my attention to work that out. So I thought, because when you know a language, you know how you can let most of it go through and pick up the bits that make sense to you. So I decided at the end of the year to do some Italian. I did 1 month only. That's all I've ever done, but I did it. And I went to Perugia to do it. Beautiful city. Every corner you turn in Perugia, like most of these Italian cities, is just full of history. And I fell in love with the architecture. I thought, God, I'm falling in love with everything, even the broom and bricks. Anyhow, it was a beautiful place. But I didn't have much money, because I forget about money just by nature, because everyone feeds me, you see. I don't need it. And I found that the university... Oh, do you mind me finishing this story? I'm sorry. It's supposed to be a meditation on God's love, but it will come back to that. I didn't have enough money to live for the month, because I'd got myself into a monastery where there was bed but no breakfast. So I had no breakfast, no lunch and no tea, and the university thing wasn't open, and I only had a little bit of money. So I had to search and search to try and find a pizzeria where they didn't charge pretty well. So I finally found one. It was $7. I could get enough stuff in here to keep me going for the day. This sounds awful, but it's true. And they had just started, husband and wife, lovely couple, and had this absolutely gorgeous boy. I'd never fallen in love with boys before, but I did this time, of about time for First Communion in Italian boys. And is that 11 or 9 or something, whatever age, and a little kid. And he took me over as my professor. I called him Il Professore, and he had got such fun out of it, because he thought it was stupid that this great big man didn't know words like window and door and table. And so he was just as keen as me to have this extra tuition. And one night he wasn't there, and my heart was really thinking, oh, where's Gianfranco? And I'm going to have to gesture this, because it's the one of the loveliest gestures I've seen in my life. He was late. I was sitting there. His dad or mum were behind the counter, and there might have been one or two other people in this little pizzeria. And he came in late, and he said, "Eccomi," which means, if you don't know Italian, look at me, I'm here. Eccomi. But he said it with such a gorgeous, it was like, everybody loves me. Aren't you glad I'm here? I'm the best thing God ever put breath in, and here I am. Perfectly an unshy or un-Australian or un-male, I don't know what words to put on it, but just simply, thanks to his parents, obviously, just a gorgeous little boy who knew he was loved. And of course he was loved. but it's remained in me an image, thinking, wouldn't it be lovely if everyone was like that in this world? Wouldn't it be lovely if we could just all take it for granted that we're loved? Because we are. But life, you know, whatever. So Jesus just says, see, that's why I thought of it. Jesus just said, the Father loves me. Imagine everyone else thinking, how can he be so sure about all that? But he was sure. He knew that God is love. Again, he says, all that the Father has is mine. All that the Father has is mine. The one who sent me is with me. True for you and true for me. The one who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone. I always do what pleases him. The one who imagined me and you into this world, and God thought the world wouldn't be what it should be without you. It doesn't double up. So for whatever mystery of God's design, he sent you into the world, to your mum and dad and brothers and sisters and us. And Jesus says, he has not left you alone. During the retreat I just made, this statement from Deuteronomy struck me very deeply. It said, God was speaking and says, it's Deuteronomy 31:8. I remember the text because it attracted me. It said, I will lead you. I am with you. I will never fail you. Nor abandon you. Have no fear. Let nothing dishearten you. Isn't it gorgeous? I mean, stunning. But there it is, Deuteronomy 31:8. I've put it in the first person. It's in the third person in the text. But that's the text. And that's what Jesus knew. And so he couldn't but respond like that little Italian boy. He couldn't but respond lovingly and please the one who loved him. And again, five times in John's Gospel, Jesus says, I am the Father, I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. Communion of love. And please remember, as I know you do, that that communion of love transcended the situations of Jesus' life. Whatever situation he was in, he kept holding on to that. And it wasn't always easy for him. Don't let's think that. It was faith for Jesus. He had to look in the dark like you and me. He had to remember in the dark what he'd seen in the light. He had to hold on to that when no one else was loving him very well. On a cross being crucified, or in front of the high priest being excommunicated from your religious community. That's heavy stuff. All that judgment and the crowd that he'd cared for so beautifully shouting, crucify him. I mean, we're not dealing with anything comfortable, are we, or cuddly here. We're dealing with real life, sadly, that can happen at different levels of all of our lives, personal and communal. And in all of that, Jesus is saying, I'm in the Father and the Father is in me. And so Jesus, that's what love is, I guess, being in someone who's in you, breathing the same breath, respect, gentleness. Well, we all have our ideas of what love is, but that's something of what we mean. And that experience was what Jesus had with this one who would never fail him and would never abandon him.